I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here 2 hours a day, offering you up something a little different. Admittedly, next hour, it's Thursday, we'll have Starla Brown in with Americans for Prosperity. We've got a topic today, certainly, don't we? Americans for Prosperity is dedicated to state issues and working with the legislature to try to free the state of Mississippi from regulations and make us more prosperous. And we've just had the special session of the state legislature where they took $250 million from you and me and handed it over to a multinational corporation, is my understanding. So we've got a topic today. We'll talk to Americans for Prosperity on this latest thing and what they're up to these days. I love learning new things. Some things just, they can still be shocking to me. As much as I know about how corrupt our medical system is, some things still shock me. I'm going to get to something in just a second. You know the RSV break epidemic we've got going on right now? This is the new fear tactic. You know where RSV came from? Well, we're going to get into that in just a few minutes. I got a quote of the day today, and it is Joe Biden. Now, I'll say it's Joe Biden. I didn't see the speech. This came from something he said, I think, yesterday. And so the words came out of this mental defective's face. But somebody else wrote it for him. But I think it's a heck of a quote of the day. And I got to tell you, it's something that I agree with. Apparently, yesterday in a speech, Joe Biden said, quote, "We the people must decide whether the rule of law will prevail or whether we will allow the dark forces and thirst for power put ahead of the principles that have long guided us." Now, I'm sure his intention with that statement was wrongheaded, but I certainly agree with it. We have allowed in this country for many, many decades now the dark forces and thirst for power to be put ahead of the principles that this country was founded on. There's no doubt about that. And there are plenty of dark forces out there in our political class aligned up against us, and they have certainly taken the principles of the founding fathers and moved them aside in their thirst for power. So we must decide. I'm going to go ahead and get into this health stuff too. And I got a little bit of economic stuff and got another guest coming on. If you want to get engaged in this, if you want to stop allowing the dark forces and thirst for power to be put ahead of our principles, then you need to get engaged. So we're going to talk to Jennifer Miller in a few minutes. She's going to talk about an event that's going on about how people can get involved. That's what Americans for Prosperity does. It's time for people to get involved. And I'm not talking about going. Apparently, Roger Wicker was in town yesterday. I wonder how many selfies people took with him. The guy that's shepherding us towards World War III. I was not there. I don't like political events. I get invited to these things all the time. I'm so uninterested in it. I take a shower every day. I don't want to have to take three or four because I'm hobnobbing with politicians. But Roger Wicker was there. I wonder if there was any real outrage. You know, I played the clip the other day of the progressives and liberals taking down AOC for her participation in leading us to World War III after she campaigned against something like that. I wonder if there were any people at the Grip and Grin who maybe have children they don't want to see grow up in a world in nuclear war. Or World War III, I'm going to just say I doubt it. I think I know people who were at this event. I'll check in with them, but I would imagine Roger Wicker had a very nice time. Lots of fawning. The Atlantic, excuse me, The Atlantic magazine. I've kind of touched on this a little bit. It did this piece about the pandemic amnesty. Let's get the title of this thing is "Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty." It was kind of hard for me. I get so much stuff I need to cover on the air, but I was trying to go through it. It was kind of hard to analyze this piece because it seems to be an appeal to the COVID hysterics to forgive us transgressors, people like me who wouldn't wear the mask, who didn't submit to the grand experiment. But at the same time, this piece seems to imply that the hystericals also, they need to get a pass on everything that they inflicted upon us as well. And that's really how it was taken by a lot of people who realize those of us who were censored, attacked, people calling for our death, people saying we shouldn't be allowed to access hospitals because we were putting everybody at risk for not taking the genetic therapy. And so it's a little difficult for us to say, oh, sure, let's let bygones be bygones. The hystericals out there destroyed a lot of lives, and many lives are being lost up to and including today. I heard a story about some author, and I can't remember her name. She had actually tweeted out, she's a child's author, by the way. She writes for children, and she had sent out tweets that said essentially, COVID is at least killing some of the right people, those who are anti-vaccine and anti-mask. She apparently also put out a tweet that said something along the lines of referring to Justice Kavanaugh, that our rapey judge still seems to be doing fine, so maybe COVID doesn't kill all the right people. Well, the news on her is that she's just suddenly died. She was, I believe, 49. Huh. We don't know. We don't know what killed her. But it's that tone that was taken with those of us who did not buy into the hysteria, are not chronic hypochondriacs, and who understand that typically vaccines are studied for 7 to 12 years, being hesitant about a new vaccine. And I've got another vaccine story for you in just a second. It was interesting. Somebody's put out I guess it's like a meme, but they've got a screenshot of, here's the Atlantic. As I said, the Atlantic magazine's recent headline is, "Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty." Here are four of the headlines from the Atlantic previous to this. Here's the first one. The anti-vaccine right brought human sacrifice to America. Here's another one. Unvaccinated people need to bear the burden. A third one, vaccine refusers don't get to dictate terms anymore. And the last one, some Americans no longer believe in the common good. But now they want amnesty. They want everybody to just get along. They talk about amnesty. I'm telling you, all the people who are responsible for the policies enacted around COVID need to be removed from their positions. And even some of them that might have had some good intentions, they got caught up in the hypochondria. They believed Pfizer. They believed Moderna. They believed the FDA. They believed the CDC. But the problem is, no matter how well-intentioned, they can't be trusted to make public health decisions ever again. But, of course, this won't happen. And we know this because Anthony Fauci, if you haven't seen the real Anthony Fauci or read the book, you should, to understand exactly what's been running the show. Anthony Fauci was responsible for killing thousands of gay people with AZT therapy. He experimented on orphans and puppies. The orphans were largely orphans of color, too. And yet he has remained and has been the highest paid government employee. So the only real thing that you can do is you can fire your medical professional. If you have a pediatrician that is encouraging you to medically experiment on your child for a disease that they are not susceptible to, you should fire them. We can't get rid of the Thomas Dobbs of the world. They're above our reach. It doesn't really matter what we think or what we say. These people parachute out into other jobs, and they retain their status as long as they are doing the bidding of Big Pharma. But you can fire your pediatrician, and there's lots of good doctors out there who are willing to take on some new patients, and they're not going to push an experimental gene therapy on your toddler. So you can do that. But here's something to bolster that. This was shocking to me. Right now we're being barraged with the threats of RSV, right? You've heard this. I've played the clips on the show. It's filling up the hospitals. Kids everywhere are coming down with RSV. I ran across this in the British Medical Journal, not some rag. Now, I was not perusing the British Medical Journal. I heard this in an interview with a doctor who was fired because she was trying to treat, patients during COVID. Here's a story about your medical system, what this woman recounted. She essentially said, during COVID, they started enacting protocols. I believe she was using hydroxychloroquine. And they got a couple of months into the pandemic and had seen a lot of patients. And she went up to her hospital administrator. He said something like, "How's it going?" She said, "Oh, I'm just so thrilled. We have not had a single one of our patients hospitalized." She expected the hospital administrator to really pat her on the back and say, "Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic. What are you doing?" He didn't. He was very sanguine about it. Oh. He was not happy at all. This is when the light bulb went off in her head, the same way as when my pediatrician asked me how I kept my kids so healthy. Well, he didn't really ask me that direct question, but when I started to tell him, I realized he was totally uninterested. I thought, oh, okay, I understand. They don't want us to be healthy. They're not interested in that. But this hospital administrator was actually not really very enthusiastic that this woman had saved all of her patients, all of her COVID patients, from any hospitalization using very cheap and effective drugs. She was eventually removed from her position. But she mentioned something in passing in this interview about RSV. I stopped the interview there, and I went to the information genie that is in the internet, and took me about 15 seconds to find this in the British Medical Journal where it comes to RSV. This is in, again, I'm going to say it again because I want people to understand that this stuff is right out in plain sight. And any doctor out there knows these things too, but I doubt they've ever told you this. I believe my children had RSV. They really need the croup. The croup is a terrifying sound. When your small child has the croup, it really sounds like they are gasping their last breaths. I think RSV has some croup-like cough, but the croup would really terrorize a lot of parents if you told people there was deadly croup out there, because that honking cough is just terrible. But we've got RSV right now. And here's from the British Medical Journal. Where did we get RSV from? It must just be because there are just pathogens out there in the wild and humans have to deal with them. And well, no, RSV was created as well. How about this? This is the British Medical Journal. Another important consideration in attempts to eradicate poliomyelitis by vaccination is the contamination of polio vaccines by chimpanzee coryza virus, renamed respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. Did you know that? I did not know this. Did you know that the RSV outbreak we've had right now and the millions and millions of children over the years that have gotten this disease, of which a few are hospitalized, it's not a deadly disease to most children. It'll concern you as a parent. You never want to see your child fighting for breath. But did you know that the RSV virus actually is a byproduct of polio vaccines, a contaminated polio vaccine? That's what this doctor said. And I stopped the interview and went to go research it and found this on the British Medical Journal. Now, I'm not going to take the time. This thing gets into very sciencey. Morris et al., 1956, recovery of cytopathogenic agent from chimpanzee with coryza, proc, soc, Ek Biomed 92-, you know, it goes through all of these different reports, but I'll get to the end of this thing. They proposed a new name for this agent, quote, respiratory syncytial virus, parentheses RSV. And here it is. This is the British Medical Journal. RSV has spread via contaminated polio vaccines like wildfire all over the world and continues causing serious lower respiratory tract infections in infants. Isn't that interesting? So as you hear them fear-monger you about RSV now, or if you've had a child who has had RSV and it's been concerning to you, just know this was another disease created by these same people. Amnesty? Nah. Accountability? Yes. I'll be right back. The Fed raised rates yesterday, and I want to talk about that because I want to explain. There's a lag between raising rates and when you see it economically, and I think there's some things underappreciated about these rate hikes and how important and impactful they're going to be to our economy, even though we're not seeing it yet. But I want to touch back on this RSV issue. As I have just found out, and maybe I'm the last person in the world to know this, that RSV actually came from contaminated polio vaccines. Boy, isn't it great that the vaccine manufacturers have got full liability protection. But this is before liability protection. That came in the 1980s. And I believe this happened back in the 1950s. This is where RSV got its start. It's where it hit the scene. Contaminated polio vaccines. Kind of feels to me like if that was before the liability protection, maybe the company who contaminated the polio vaccines that have created a world. Let me quote the British Medical Journal again. They proposed after this contaminated polio vaccine induced this chimpanzee issue virus. And oh, it came from a Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. That's weird, isn't it? A lot of focus on the Wuhan lab. What about Walter Reed that kicked off RSV with a contaminated polio vaccine that they had been working on with some monkey virus in it? Back to the British Medical Journal, they proposed a new name for this agent, respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. RSV has spread via contaminated polio vaccines like wildfire all over the world and continues causing serious lower respiratory tract infections in infants. I did a quick search just to try to figure out some in the U.S. each year, somewhere between 58 and 80,000 little kids are hospitalized for this. About 2.1 million kids get RSV each year. 58,000 to 80,000 of them are hospitalized. And the average cost to treat this in hospitalization is somewhere between $8,903 and $12,103. It seems like an awful lot of money that parents are forced to pay to treat a disease that was actually caused by a vaccine maker in the 1950s. It seems like maybe they should give us a freebie there. You know, when they find out there's something wrong with a car, you take it to the dealership, you drop it off, you pick it up a few hours later, they fix the problem. They don't give you a bill for it. They recognize their mistake. Not so with this. Hundreds of millions of dollars are flow from parents' wallets into the medical system to treat their child from a potentially dangerous disease. It's not, they're going to try to make you think that your child's about to die because conveniently enough, they've got a vaccine coming out for RSV. Isn't that interesting? The timing, God love these pharmaceutical companies and their convenient timing. It's quite amazing, isn't it? Yeah, so that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money spent on RSV and now the fear-mongering and now a vaccine. They're going to give you, this is what they're about to roll out to you, just so I'm, make sure I'm tying this in a nice little bow. They're about to roll out a brand new vaccine. I don't know, I'm not sure if I need to air quote that in the studio. We don't know. This COVID shot is certainly not a vaccine, but they're about to roll out a new shot for RSV after they fear-monger it for a little while, get you all charged up, get parents queued in line. For this RSV, they're going to give you a new vaccine, which you'll have to pay for, to address a disease caused by one of the previous vaccines. This is quite a racket. You've got to admire their business model. Of course, this is the same for pharmaceuticals. You take a pharmaceutical, you don't address the underlying problem, so your body continues to deteriorate, and sometimes the pills cause other side effects, which they have a pill for. I've never been so proud to have done a podcast years and years ago called Escape the Medical System. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, speaking to you live from the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Fed and battle back against a narrative I am seeing develop on the right that I think is wrong. The Fed yesterday hiked interest rates, still not enough to beat down inflation, because you have to get interest rates higher than the rate of inflation to actually get real returns on savings, which should be encouraging people to save and not spend, when you've still got a Fed funds rate and bond rates that are half of what inflation is, that encourages spending, not saving, which stokes inflation. But the market took the rate hike yesterday. They did another 75 basis points. That's 0.75% rate. And then the market's did fine. They were up about 1%. And then Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, came out and said, we're not looking really to slow down right now. And I think people need to understand we're going to keep rates up higher longer. The markets did not like that a bit. They immediately tanked about 3%. And this was in just the closing minutes of the stock market. It went from 1% up to 2% down pretty immediately. It's a pretty drastic thing because the market was saying, oh, well, it looks like this is they're going to start slowing down and then maybe they'll reverse soon. You'll hear the term pivot. Now, to me, to be honest with you, Jerome Powell talking tough like this feels like a bluff. And he wants to try to tell everybody he's going to be tough so that people expect that and maybe a little air comes out of the markets and then he can flip around when things really start to break. And here's the thing that people need to understand about interest rates when they go up like this. Understand that if you have a company or a government or a municipality, anybody that's borrowed money for, let's just say 1%, if you suddenly have to start paying 2% on that debt, that means your interest expense just doubled. Now, in the past year, we've seen interest rates go up essentially from zero to about 4%. So if you were carrying debt at 1% and now you're having to pay 5%, you know, a little bit more than the Fed funds rate, your interest expense just quadrupled. But it takes a while for these things to come through because for companies, they don't refinance their debt every month. So as these companies go out now and seek to find more, they tried to go out and borrow more money. Now suddenly they have to borrow at much higher interest rates. But this takes a while. And the effects of a Fed rate hike on the economy, it's about a 9-month lag, somewhere in the 9 months to a year, because that's when the companies start, more and more companies start having to refinance their debt at these higher levels. And we've got a lot of companies, big companies on the S&P 500 that are called zombie companies. When money was paid, you know, when you had almost 0% interest, they were having problems meeting their interest payments. All of the profits that some of these companies made could not pay the interest on their debt. They're called zombie companies. And they've been doing just fine as long as they could continue to refinance their debt and borrow more at these really, really ridiculously low interest rates. They're going to be in some trouble when they have to reach out for more debt soon. So there's a lag there. So Powell is continuing to raise rates because nothing is really broken yet. We saw something in Great Britain. They've got they're kind of in the same box that we're in. And they had to do an emergency bailout of their pension system over there. But anyway, 10-year bond popped from about 4% to 4.2%. That's a big move in the bond market in a matter of hours. But I wanted to address this real quick, and then we're going to come back with something more positive. Some people are getting together. They're trying to get people engaged, and this political process, trying to wrestle control back to the hands of the people. We gave our rulers, and they are, I don't like to call them leaders, but they are rulers. We gave our rulers probably about 60 or 70 years head start on us. It's time to do some pretty drastic stuff. But I've seen a new narrative in some of the alternative media on the right, and it is this idea that the Fed and Jerome Powell was strategically placed by Donald Trump to take down the world, the New World Order. And I spent about 3 years duking it out with the Q followers, and I'm going to duke it out with you on this one as well. I want hope. I like hope. But my hope is always tempered by some level of reality. And this is an absolutely absurd thing to think that Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, is now an ally and a brilliant Trump move. This is the guy who blew up, continued to blow up, the largest bubble in the history of mankind. After Janet Yellen and after Ben Bernanke, all of them. Now, there's a piece. I was just glad to see this. Like I say, I try to bring in reinforcements here. One of my favorite writers out there, very smart guy, his name is Brandon Smith. He's got a website, I think it's Alt Market. And he wrote this: I have started to see a new narrative being spread within mainstream media platforms as well as alternative media platforms suggesting that the Fed is necessary because it is working to, quote, counter, unquote, the agenda of Joe Biden and the Democrats. Some people claim the central bank is, quote, protecting, unquote, America from the schemes of the UN and the European interests. I touched on this maybe last week when I first saw it. Was State of the Nation was the article I was commenting on, where State of the Nation is going out there and telling their people, their readers, that this is one of Trump's grand chess moves to have put Jerome Powell in there, and he's stealth working against the globalists. A central bank guy that has not ever come out and told you, hey, we're the ones that caused this inflation. I mean, he's lied to you at every turn. He's wrong about everything, just like all of the Federal Reserve chairmen are. But the right is being convinced to believe that Jerome Powell is a hero. I never thought I'd live to see it, but I shouldn't be surprised. Brandon Smith goes on to say, this is perhaps the most moronic theory I've ever heard. But it makes sense that the central bank and its puppets would be trying to plant the notion that the Fed is some kind of, air quotes here in the studio, hero, secretly fighting a war on our behalf. The money elites associated with the Fed have inflated perhaps the largest financial bubble in the history of the world over the past 14 years. They did this with bailouts. They did it with QE. They did this with COVID pandemic checks and loans, and now the bubble is popping. They know it's popping because they want it to pop. So there's my little... I know I cannot stop people from accepting some of the most ridiculous things. We saw this during the Q movement, and it's back too. But to think that people now believe that the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, the Death Star, as I refer to it, is somehow a hero, a white knight. What do they call it? White hat. He's a white hat at the Fed. You're going to find out, and this is going to be a very painful lesson. You're going to see exactly the Fed has been up to nefarious work for the past 110 years, just about. They'll celebrate their 110th anniversary next year. And you're going to find out there's no white hat at the Fed coming to rescue you. They're going to inflict pain. It's very similar to what I was talking about with RSV. Turns out RSV actually was the product of a contaminated polio vaccine that they shipped around the world and spread RSV like wildfire, according to the British Medical Journal. And now they're going to sell you a new vaccine to treat the disease created by the old vaccine. Jerome Powell is about to inflict pain on people because of all of the bad mistakes that the Federal Reserve has done for 110 years, but most specifically for the last 14 years. And he has said, this is going to be the acorn that grows into the Great Reset. He's not here to save you. He is here to try to keep the elites exactly where they are in their perches, in their comfy confines. He is not some hero. Please, for the love of God, don't fall for that one. And one really funny thing before we move on to a guest. I talked yesterday about the tweet that the White House had sent out. That under Joe Biden's leadership, we just saw the highest increase in Social Security benefits ever. Under his leadership. It's an automatic. We could have a ham sandwich sitting behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, and this increase to Social Security would have taken place. It's called a cost of living adjustment, and it's essentially automatic. It's never actually helps seniors get over the rate of inflation because it's always understated, but it's a biggie, and it has nothing to do with the leadership of Joe Biden. But the funny thing is they actually deleted the tweet. As I said, one of the things that drives me nuts when I see a tweet like that or I hear a politician talk is what I always hear is almost like Charlie Brown's mouth. And I guess it's the parents and Charlie Brown. Wah, 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 wah. But all I hear is, we think you're stupid and you're about to believe what we're about to say. The White House just assumed everybody was too stupid to understand cost of living adjustment. Turns out, maybe this time they found out that people aren't quite so clueless. So there are some limits to idiocracy, apparently. And I didn't read the actual, I think CNN even fact-checked that. You know you have made a bad misstep if you are a Democrat president in 2022 and CNN pushes back on you. Pretty funny stuff. They had to remove the tweet. So I don't know. Maybe I should couch that as some good news. We're not buying absolutely everything they're selling, so that's good. We'll be right back. Got a special guest coming up next.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You're about to talk to some people that are putting together an event this weekend that I think is important. It's about getting people engaged, and these are people who know how to do it. These are some of the moms that have been taking on the school boards are involved in this. These are people who do more than just sit behind a microphone for 2 days and whine about things. But I wanted to mention this, too. This is almost funny. I've got a weird sense of humor. I'll admit it. Social Security. This big Social Security increase, this cost of living adjustment that was shepherded through with Joe Biden's leadership. As I said, a ham sandwich could have been sitting in the Oval Office and the same increase would have gone through. It's actually inflationary. That's almost the funny thing about it. You're going to put more money out into the economy, chasing fewer goods. This is inflationary. The government is going to take on about $100 billion more in expense each year with this new Ponzi scheme add-on. And how are they going to pay for that $100 billion? Well, they're going to print up money to cover it. And then here's the kicker to that. And when we get to the Ponzi scheme that is Social Security, the tax for Social Security in 1937 when they initiated, when Charles Ponzi originally set this up, no, I'm sorry, that was FDR, the tax for Social Security was 2%. It was 2%. Now it's 12.4%. And now Medicare and Medicaid are rolled into that at a 2.9%. So we're about 15.3% in taxes to continue to prop up this Ponzi scheme that is it's reaching terminal illness. It is not going to be there for you younger people. You better start putting some money away. Store some acorns. Social Security is not going to be around. But the fact that even the Social Security increase is inflationary is almost funny to me. All right, we're going to move on to something a little bit more productive. There's an event going on this weekend. I've got Jennifer Miller on with me. And Jennifer, I became friends with at the Madison County School Boards. And one of the things I've really admired about Jennifer Miller is she has gone to the school boards with, as they say, the receipts. She does fantastic presentations, very, very matter of fact. I think she's had a tremendous amount of influence on the board because of her really an academic approach to many of the things, everything from masking to the objectionable material that's at school choices, because she comes at it from being a psychologist as well. It's been great to get to know her. She's fantastic at the school board, and she continues her work there. We got Jennifer Miller on with us. Jennifer, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, so you guys are doing an event, so tell us what's going on and what you guys are planning next.
Yeah, so I have partnered with Restore Liberty to put together a seminar that we're calling Stand for Liberty, Civil Stewardship from a Biblical Worldview. And we are inviting all Christians, all conservatives, all libertarians who want to come and receive some what we're calling practical tacticals. We're actually going to be sharing ways to engage in our communities, just what you were describing, whether it's school boards, whether it's the city level with mayors and city councils or the state level, but doing it in a way that is effective, but also allows a person to remain consistent with their Christian worldview and their Christian principles. So we're going to be doing that all day Saturday with Rebecca Cheney, who's the director of the Mississippi chapter of Restore Liberty, but also retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb, who's the national director of Restore Liberty. He's coming into town as well. And the three of us will be sharing on Saturday, starting at 9 o'clock, going all day. And then we're also going to be doing a special roundtable on Sunday night. We've invited some local pastors to sit in and provide a pastoral roundtable in the first hour. And then Darren and Rebecca and I will be offering a roundtable in the second hour, just to allow people to ask questions and make it more engaged and dynamic.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, I think a lot of people have been a little disappointed that in a lot of the more extreme topics that have gone on, that the churches really have not provided a lot of leadership to people. They seem to have been either absent or almost, ignoring or complicit in some of these things. I think people are looking for some of that religious leadership through some of this stuff.
I agree, and I think that that's what's so amazing, that the pastors who are going to be participating, as well as the host church, which is my own church, is going to be at the Point Church in Brandon. That's Point with an E, and that's where we're going to be holding both the seminar on Saturday and the roundtables on Sunday. And it's about engaging Christians, engaging the church, and yes, you know, having an opportunity for pastors to also speak into this space. Because a lot of Christians are either confused or unsure about how to properly engage. They're not sure what's biblical. You know, they're not sure what's appropriate beyond voting. You know, and voting is great and voting's important. I hope everybody goes out and votes on Tuesday. But it's about more than that. That's what we've learned since COVID, is you have to have a relationship. You have to express your voice in the ways that are made available to us. So that we can actually have an effect before or outside of just the voting booth, because a lot of times policies, you know, that's they happen after. they happen in between. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things is that I think people get, and myself included, you know, we all think it's just one person against the machine. It doesn't matter. We can call our congressman. It just doesn't feel very rewarding. But when you get into groups like Restore Liberty or anything, that's where the power comes. And it's the voting is fine, but you have to push politicians to give you candidates that agree with you. You've got to push their policy positions and big groups. And one of the reasons to attend these things is to learn how these groups can actually influence policy and move the needle on things, where each of us feel kind of impotent to do that by ourselves. Once you get involved with a group of like-minded people, you can start pushing stuff. But it's also a great way to meet like-minded people and understand that the entire world's not insane. There are a lot of good people out there, and when you get a big group of them together, it's kind of nourishing to the soul to see that.
Absolutely, you know, and we're going to be talking about just our spiritual heritage and just understanding even what's constitutional and how we can operate in a way that's both constitutional and biblical. I'm going to be talking about this counterfeit system that we're up against and just some of the effective ways that we can try to push back against it, because it does feel like we're up against a big machine, and in some ways we are.
But
it's not about just focusing at the federal level. It's about focusing at the local level, where you can maximize your influence. You know, going to the school board and working with them to say, no, we're not going to bring CRT into our schools. You know, talking to the local, government officials who can actually enact, you know, legislation that I know one piece that's being put out or that's going to be introduced next legislative session is a parent's bill of rights, you know, when it comes to the educational system. That's being done because local people, parents, who care, you know, are getting involved and making those relationships and engaging in a way that's effective. And that's what we want to bring is effective engagement, not just going and screaming like a madman, but instead, you know, sharing what I have learned has been the most impactful and the most strategic ways of engaging over the last year and a half that I've been so intentionally involved.
Yeah, and it's made a difference. I absolutely believe I've been to several of the school board meetings with you guys, and I believe you guys move the needle. I don't know what the last year or two looks like without groups like you and the tireless group of a few dozen parents that continually made these things. It made a difference. I watched it happen, and had that resistance not been there, there's no telling what would be going on right now. So. Yeah, there's value to it. I wish you guys had bigger numbers, but maybe this event this weekend starts to add to those. So tell us again exactly where it is and when it is.
Sure. So it's a Stand for Liberty seminar. It's hosted at the Point Church in Brandon on Star Road right off the 20. You can just Google the Point Church, or you can go to the Point with an E, P-O-I-N-T-E, Brandon.com. It starts at 9 a.m. on Saturday. The roundtable on Sunday starts at 6 p.m. And I'm encouraging people, come for what you can come for. It's a free seminar. You can come and go. If you can only make the Saturday morning session, then come for that. If you can only make the afternoon session, we have a lunch break, and we'll be resuming at 1 o'clock after the lunch break. If you can only come for that, come for that. So you'll be edified no matter how much of the seminar that you're able to participate in. And so we're just asking, you know, all like-minded people, all people who want to be encouraged, but also equipped,
right?
And what to do and how to engage effectively. So it's this Saturday, November 5th. Doors open at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then again Sunday starting at 6 p.m. for those roundtables.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jennifer. I certainly do appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, coming to you from the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. And it's Thursday, so we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour. When we can circle around to each other, we've got Starla Brown in with Americans for Prosperity. We had a break there for a little while. I was gone, then you were gone. And yeah, so I'm glad to have you back in the studio. Find out what everything that's going on. You guys, your organization is around trying to make Mississippi more prosperous, trying to get some of the red tape, trying to unleash entrepreneurial spirit in the state of Mississippi, which desperately needs it.
Sure. So, we're looking at how can we improve healthcare, right? How can we just improve free market principles? And so I know this is a tough week when it comes to free market principles, because we've had another corporate welfare deal that took place in the Capitol yesterday very quickly with a lot of, happiness that was put out early on and what this would look like. But, you know, I haven't had the opportunity, as many of the legislators or anyone else did, to really review all of the pieces of this deal. So I'm gonna travel back in time today, because I just really want to talk about what corporate welfare is in general, right? So when you take the mindset that you're going to pick a winner in the marketplace,
right?
And it's easy sometimes to say, in some states I've seen the narrative that, well, we don't have any other business like that, right? We don't have another business like that coming into the state. But basically, you are picking a winner. You're picking winners, and often you're picking losers if your state is giving tax credits, special perks and benefits, right, to one entity over another.
Yeah.
And so, there's a lot of ways to spin this. Well, we need jobs, right? And I've worked with many people in the past and in other states, and we see this all around the country. It is not unique to Mississippi, although I will say Mississippi has a very long history of federal tax dollars coming into the state to some extent, maybe more than some other states, maybe not. Maybe there are some that are quite equal. But it has long been paraded as the way to boost our economy, right, is to take all the tax dollars we can go to Washington, D.C. and get, take all the tax dollars that we can get locally and from the state and cater to corporations. And there are alternatives to doing that. But I want to travel back in time to something where we do have a little bit of data that I brought in today. So there's a Nissan plant, right?
Right.
Know where that's located?
Yep.
Yep.
Everybody knows the Nissan plant.
Okay, right, exactly. So this report is actually from 2013. So there could be some data that's changed over time. But for the most part, what happened, there was a $1.3 billion, and that's a total between state and county subsidies for the deal.
Now, was this cash that went to, or was it all tax credit stuff?
So there was a combination of things, yeah. And that's the problem we get. Sometimes the tax breaks, if done correctly, are a little more palatable.
Yeah.
But it's the direct grants and the direct
right.
funds that go. You know, I look at I had this in Palm Beach County, for example. There were two entities there who did the same type of business in the aviation industry. Essentially, side by side, they accomplished the same things. The economic development people in Palm Beach County decided to give one of those entities the money because the entity said, well, we want to move to a bigger warehouse, a different facility. And if you will fund that, right, if you'll take care of that move in that warehouse for us and getting us in there and the things that go along with that cost and expense, we'll stay in your county. If you don't, we're going to leave.
Right.
So my thought process was, okay, what if they do leave? Can the other guy just expand his business? Because he was a free market principled individual, right? He was literally very, very free market oriented. And it was a kick to him, right? They didn't go to him about any, you know, he would never have thought about going to the government and asking. He would just built his business on his own, right? On his own merits. And so it was like $850,000 for this move. And then his competition now is being picked as a winner.
Right.
They have an upward hand that he didn't have. And so this is what can happen, right, when we talk about the winners and losers piece. But going back to the Nissan plant, one of the things that people forget when we talk about all these jobs, right, it's always billed as job creation and corporate welfare. You know, all these jobs are going to open up. And that's a good thing, right? We want more jobs in Mississippi. We want more higher paying jobs and economic prosperity. But what generally happens is when these jobs are created, they have a cost to them. And the taxpayers are generally, when you look at that price, in some way, whether it's county taxes, state taxes, even federal taxes, right, coming in to fund this project, you, the taxpayer, are actually paying for that job to exist, right? Now, I don't know about you. I don't have any plans. Maybe one day I would work at the Nissan plant. Maybe one day I would work at the steel mill that we're talking about. But I don't think so, right? So my tax dollars, just like a lot of people who may never work at these places, will go towards paying for those jobs. But here's an interesting thing about the jobs. So in this report in 2013 at the Nissan plant, the estimated cost per job was, when you break it all down out of this $1.3 billion and all the programs that had to take place, was $290,000 per job.
Yeah.
$290,000 to create the one job.
Right.
But here's a little caveat to that. Nissan actually had at that time, based on the publicly available records for this report, there were 20% of those jobs were only temporary jobs. So a lot of these companies in that sort of sector, if you will, of manufacturing, whatever, have a lot of temporary positions. They're not they're needed for certain projects. They're needed for certain times. Even Pascagoula, the shipyard, which is, I think, the largest employer in the state, actually has jobs that are sometimes based on a project, right? When you're constructing things or doing things
done,
like
it's over.
Right. And so when it's done, it's over. They're temporary employees. And those temporary employees, by most estimations at the time in 2013, were making about $12 an hour.
Yeah.
You can probably go to most fast food restaurants and make that today,
you
right? You might even have some perks and benefits you don't have. So there was this huge subsidy package, same scenario, another governor, right? Called a one-day special session. Everybody comes in. Everybody votes for the package maybe doesn't have all the details, and there you go. If you break down what happened at the Nissan plant, there was $80 million for training. These were some of the things up front that, that originally were supposed to happen. There was $68 million for the preparation of the site, which was to be leased to Nissan, you know, initially at $10,000 per month, and then it was going to increase to $100,000 once production began, right? $59 million road improvements. It's a lot of money. But yeah. But often what happens, the road improvements are only the road improvements. Sometimes they can be countywide. They can, there can actually be some monies put towards whatever. But a lot of times those road improvements can be a very short stretch of road.
To get
road.
Nissan trucks on and off right. the interstate.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. So $33 million for water and sewer infrastructure. These are things I think the people in Jackson today, and were a little outspoken yesterday, some of the legislators, even though they voted for this to move forward, were asking, like, how are we going to handle the infrastructure? So we have a state. I drive on the roads every day. I don't live in Jackson. I know you do, so you've experienced the whole breakdown of the system there. But there are other systems that are stretched and waning, and there's some that are that have managed their municipal budgets and yeah. some of their state dollars well. But we know that that's, that infrastructure is an important piece, and it is sort of a proper role of government, right? We pay taxes in for government to maintain those kind of things. So, you know, you could look at it that way, but again, what was the water and sewer infrastructure? Was it pulling everything into the plant? Was it you know, what, yeah. what you what
are
you
we
actually
plumbing
doing?
Their building?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and then $17 million for the construction of a vehicle preparation building, $25 million for a university level automotive engineering center, $5 million for a marketing plan to promote both the company and the state. And that
wow.
is something when you
for
look,
Nissan,
right,
which everybody knows they've got their own marketing budget.
Yeah, I know they exist.
Yeah,
exactly. So there was another $5 million to just kind of, you know, let everybody know that, hey, this is happening, right? $8 million for miscellaneous expenditures. Who knows what those might be? And then a waiver of licensing and permitting fees. Now, these are the bullet points from
yeah.
the study. You know, there are a lot of people out there just trying to start a small business.
Right.
I'm sure they'd love to have some of their license fees waived
yeah.
for their startups, too. So the problem becomes is, at the end of the day, corporate welfare literally just picks winners and losers.
Yeah.
It is expensive, the jobs that are created. I remember, like, well, you can look at something like the film industry, right, which also gets tax credits and breaks and incentives. A lot of people say, well, it creates all these jobs. But the way they counted jobs in most states is, let's say I'm an actress, right, and I'm going to do a commercial for 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, I'm working on the set of, you know, CSI and, you know, or whatever, some one of the, you know, major television shows. I worked in two different places that week. So what they'll say is they created
two jobs.
It's not two jobs. It's one person employed for the entire week. They're
yeah.
just working in different locations. And so this is how that narrative kind of boondoggles itself away. Corporate welfare is something we've long opposed. But I'm going to say this. There's a long history of it here. And until the paradigm shifts where people understand, okay, that the people they've placed into office are voting for these things, and they determine that those individuals need to hear from them. Now, if you think it's great, and you're one of those people who says, yep, I think it's a great job creation package. I've heard people say that over
oh, yeah.
the years. If you don't want to look at things like, you know, when businesses come to a state, they, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting, there was a lot of money for training, $80 million for training, which says to me, perhaps we didn't have a workforce
right.
that was trained
right.
to do these jobs, right? Well, it's not a bad thing for an organization to invest in training their staff and their employees. But, you know, it's kind of between a rock and a hard spot here. Like, I'm okay with that organization training their employees. I'm not necessarily okay with my tax dollars paying for
right.
that training.
Right.
So, you know, I think that big corporations are getting breaks all over the country in states.
Well, I mean, and that's the
like
thing,
this.
Too. I mean, every company has to train their employees.
Sure.
So everybody takes it on their own selves. I mean, if you open up an insurance agency, even if you're going to employ 30 people, and some insurance agencies mm-hmm. do, they don't get the state to train these people on everything, and then just wait for a fully functional, ready to hit the ground running. I mean, they invest in their workers. This is part of starting a business. It's a calculation on whether the business is viable. There's just all of these things. And I don't know what that level is, but this kind of reminds me of the student loan forgiveness stuff, mm-hmm. where there's so many people out there that go, well, what the hell? I paid for my kids' college by sacrificing. We saved for it, or I've already paid off my student loans or all that other stuff. There's so many business owners out there that are just looking at this and going, what do I got to do? You know, I've got to go out there and borrow extra money, work extra. I do all of these things to do what is for a business. And these people get to waltz in and within a day get $250 million plopped in their lap. Jobs or no jobs. I mean, there's a lot of businesses in Mississippi that collectively, 10 of them, employ 1,000 people. They're important, too. And so this one lump sum 1,000 job business just seems to leapfrog over all of them. It is radically unfair to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, 100%. But I think pretty much what we saw tomorrow was, I think, what was it, 5 people in the House didn't vote for
The Freedom Caucus, I guess.
Yeah, probably. I didn't look at the actual names on all the votes, but
they were pretty vocal against it.
Yeah, I mean, we had someone at the Capitol to sit through and listen to some of the different things, but you know, really, what transpired there is it was a quick come in. Bills weren't completely finished. Senate kind of votes.
Okay, so this is my question. You understand the legislative process, and I don't. Is there any justification? Okay, so if they have obviously been in negotiations for months, possibly years, you know, I know Nissan was years in the making, but mm-hmm. it's a bigger operation than this thing.
Right.
So for months and months, Tate Reeves' office, I'm sure, has been talking to them and House leadership and Senate leader. You know, they've been putting this together for months and months. Why is there a special session announced in a couple of days, and then they need to get all of that business done in that one particular day? Why isn't this a process of saying, hey, we're negotiating with this firm up in the Golden Triangle. We think it would be great. Here's a PDF of everything that we think we need to do to make this deal happen, and let all the legislators sit at home in their districts and read over this thing for a couple of weeks, and then a whole bunch of informed legislators come in and have their questions and debate or agree to it. Why is it this, here's the bill, be on the House floor in 2 hours? We're voting on this thing. Is there any logical explanation for that?
So I can only speculate because I don't know truly the answer, but a lot of times it's one of two things. Well, one, if you did that, there'd be a lot of transparency in government, right? So if you had very open, transparent government, the debate, that open process, the media could come in, other people could come in.
Transparency could occur.
And so that sometimes there are people out there who really do believe that corporate welfare is a bad thing and don't support this. I mean, there's certainly been a myriad of people on social media who feel like this deal is just another, you know, cronyism corporate welfare deal. So you see that. So that's one speculation you can make. The other is this, is that when it's time to sign on the bottom line, you've got to send some money to those people, right?
Yeah.
You've got to write a check, or you've got to initiate some things. And so the bonds and whatever piece of that, the appropriations that has to happen. So generally, sometimes it's a combination. There are states that perhaps come in with a little bit different plan, but it depends on each state, because transparency in government in some states is better than others. It's not great here, as I've learned. It's not what I was accustomed to before moving back here. You know, that ability to actually have that debate is really important. I think it's something that we could improve on here in Mississippi.
I look at it. This is a $2.5 billion investment. It's not somebody going out and trying to decide if they're going to take one apartment or another. So, you know, it seems like, you know, probably the governor could have gone, hey, look, okay, I think we've got everything together here. We've come to an agreement. Give us a couple of weeks to work with the legislature and see what happens, and we'll let you know in 2 weeks. I mean, I can't imagine this company going, well, we've spent months of research on this. We're ready. We've got land site picked out, all that other stuff. But if you don't give us the money starting tomorrow, then we're going to leave. I mean, that's not how that stuff works.
Yeah, I think the problem here is that when you have a deal like this, that there could be a deluge of opposition, because people right now, especially a week out from the midterms, right, are a little fed up with economic policies right now at all levels of government, and people are stretched. So to hear that their tax dollars are going towards job, and I here's the air quotes,
here in the studio.
Yeah, job creation is kind of one of those things where people are not happy about it. There's a lot of people I saw yesterday who were making comments are not happy about it. And so, you know, what I say to people everywhere, you know, for years we have fought these battles. We've been, you know, out front and center. This is horrible. This is, you know, whatever. And I was probably exceptionally quiet yesterday a little bit to some extent, because at the end of the day, it was a done deal when everyone got there. I hope, and I'm hopeful, that as we continue to seek change here in Mississippi around not only that, but something like this, right, that people just start to understand you have to shift the paradigm. If your legislator continues to believe that this is how job growth will happen, if your leadership believes this is all okay, then this is what you're going to continue to get.
Yeah.
And so there's really not you know, there's not much I or anyone else, I hate to say that, can do other than work on the policies that could bring jobs to the state that aren't corporate welfare.
Yeah, organic
jobs.
And
so that's where we choose to focus now, because for a long time we fought these battles, and you're kind of like, I think I said to you, it was kind of like the whack-a-mole kind of thing, like run over here and put out this fire and run over there and put out this fire in this state or that place or, at this level of government. And so I think it can be more about, for us, looking at the policy. So one of the things that's interesting, what would attract a business to the state that we didn't pass this last legislation? We had a historic cut.
No taxes.
But the income tax, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like our sister state of Tennessee.
Right,
has phased that out and has worked on it and for some time. And Nissan has some headquarters there, right, over in the Nashville area. And so the thing is, I truly believe that it's going to be that type of policy that we need to work on. We need to make Mississippi one of the best places for businesses to come in and thrive and for people to live and work. And none of us that are against corporate welfare are against job creation.
Right.
We're not against good economic policy. But it's like kind of when we look at healthcare, you know, everybody's looking for this silver bullet, right? And so with corporate welfare, it's boom, I give you money, you come in our state,
right.
I give you all these breaks that I don't give to everyone else, and you promise you'll do a certain amount of jobs. And sometimes you make good on that, and sometimes you don't. And there
sometimes you're a beef plant.
Right. And there is some rollback in some of that. There can be companies, there are companies in some states that have come in and received a considerable amount of corporate welfare and failed as a company, completely failed and shut down their doors. And you don't get that money back when that happens, right? So there's that risk to the taxpayers' dollars as well. But I think at the end of the day, it's kind of like healthcare as far as making Mississippi be better for organizations or corporations or even medium-sized businesses to come in and open up shop, right? Or more
Absolutely.
Small businesses.
Yeah.
You know, most states' jobs are really – it's at that small business level that we're talking about where we need to really make
right.
that increase.
The biggest employers out there. Hey, we got to take a quick break with this great topic. I think this is very – I don't know. It's kind of up your alley, kind of up my alley. Mississippi – I've talked about it since y'all have been coming on here.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of our model. Every 5 years, we give away a bunch of money to attract one big employer, and then we just sit around and wait for the next big announcement instead of just making this state so business-friendly that people are flocking here without having to get taxpayer goodies. Seems like that's a better path. All right, we're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we're here with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. This is what they understand. They understand not economic development and handouts, but, you know, bringing business to state, making it for an attractive state that businesses just want to come do business in. There's a whole lot of ways. I mean, you look at this $250 million, and they're telling us it's a $2.5 billion operation. That's only 10%. It, you know, there's got to be a bunch of ways to make somebody in their long-term calculation of operating a profitable business so inexpensive and away from the burdens of regulation in a state to make well more than 10% extra over the lifetime of their business. So this, but the question I have always is, so, you know, you were talking about Nissan. It sounds like this is kind of the somewhere in the upper 200,000 per job is what Mississippi is willing to pay. I think you said Nissan was 289 or something like that. So this job, this business at $250 million for 1,000 jobs, it's $250,000 per job to create this. Where, you know, and people can look at that and say, well, they said they're making $93,000 a piece. We won't even touch on that subject yet. But
If you took a statistics class and you're talking about, remember, that's right, the average.
Right.
Okay. So it doesn't take a whole lot of people at the top level of this corporation to be making a large six-figure salary. And then you couple it in with the $30,000 a year jobs and you can get to that number.
But I think a lot of people in their brain, they say, well, it costs $250,000 per job. And let's just say you've got people that are going to earn roughly $100,000. So in 2.5 years, you've got your money back. But that's not the calculation for the state, because that's going into a person's pocket. So what the state has to consider is their return on investment. Is it, do they assume they're going to pull in enough through income taxes and municipal taxes or other fees? I mean, how do they... What's the return on investment thing that makes this attractive to the state? Now, this will be really attractive to a bunch of people in the Golden Triangle. You're going to get some good jobs and someone probably build some more houses, builders. You know, there's people who benefit. Right. But is the state calculation this?
That sort of community reinvestment piece that happens when you have something, a large business.
Well, it's like all of these convention centers and stadiums. Yeah. They always tell you how it's just going to be a big boon to the community and across the country. It's never worked out that way. Like, I don't think ever once it's been the return on investment. But what is the state calculation based on?
So in this case, we are still running an analysis, and I'm kind of working with our policy team today, because unfortunately, I don't think the bills were really 100% finished when we showed up at the Capitol yesterday. And so we're kind of trying to work through to see. I mean, obviously, there are some sort of stop gaps, if you will, if, you know, if this organization doesn't make good on some of the promises, that kind of thing. It's the grants and the direct payments pieces that are the most adverse part of these type of deals. And so we're still breaking that down. Hopefully I'll get some analysis. But, you know, my concern, too, is I still want to see the personal income tax eliminated in the state. And my question becomes, and I know we had a historic tax cut that's going to happen over 4 years. But my question becomes is, when you take out of your reserves, or you take out this type of money and you take out of your budget and you displace it in this way, and you how you get it back or don't get it back, right? Because that's some of it you don't get back.
There's at least opportunity cost.
That's right.
I mean, it's being used for that instead of something else.
Sure. So the question becomes is, like, how does that impact something like that policy? You know, how do we get there? Because, you know, are there pieces of this in order for it to be paid back that still have to come out of revenue? And it's great. I see these messages about revenues up in the state. I see this a lot. I think if it was up a dollar, we'd still see that message. But the truth of the matter is, you've got to look at not just at that state level of government or the local level. You've got to look at what's happening at the federal level. And you've got to put the inflation piece back into this.
Right.
And, you know, look, next Tuesday, for better or worse, in some cases, I do believe there are some policy champions out there that will be put into office. And that's what people have to do. They really have to do their due diligence on what people stand for. I know our partner organization and our America's Prosperity Action has been out all over them. In fact, two of our staff members are in Ohio this week in a swing district there, hoping to knock a few more doors and make a difference. I do believe there are some people out there who want to go to Washington, D.C. and do the right thing. And we work very hard to try to find and identify those people. Planning on doing that here in Mississippi and identifying some people for next year that would look at something like this. The problem becomes is whether sometimes people get to office and they are strong enough to stand on their principles. Right. And when you are, sometimes you get denigrated for being that strong person. Now, look, there's a point in time where sometimes compromise is going to happen because it's the only way to get, you know, the government to continue to function and go through. You might not like it all the time, but sometimes that does need to happen. And so you don't want to be the person of everything is no. But you also want to be a person of principled policy, right? Principled policy that really impacts our state, impacts the citizens. And what I see a lot of times is, at the end of the day, we don't always put the people first, right? We don't always really believe in the people in this state to actually make their own path, right? And to look at bottom-up approaches. Not everything has to be done by the government. It's like we're talking right now, and there's been some meetings with the Senate about expanding Medicaid in terms of post Roe v. Wade. The thing is, there's some organizations that have done a super job of identifying this, but there are a lot of nonprofit organizations.
Of course, yeah.
There are a lot of faith-based organizations out there that are willing to help in this scenario, right, with crisis pregnancies.
Right.
We need to be investing our, you know, at a choice resource there. We don't need to be expanding Medicaid, which is poor and subpar health care, as though that's the solution, because it's not the solution. You're not going to get this whole idea of getting X amount of days or, you know, and then the next thing is, well, let's expend it a whole year. Well, then let's start talking about child care. I'm at some point between that and, you know, and now with all the student loan forgiveness, pretty much I feel like I'm raising other people's children. And we need to work on community based approaches that help parents get to where they need to be.
Yeah.
And I know that that's kind of hard to hear that, because it's hard to hear. Hey,
it's tough love.
It's not. The government shouldn't do this, right?
No, that's the way it is. All right, we got to take another break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around. We will be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. We're with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. So this has obviously been sucked all the air out of the room for the last few days anyway, the last week. But what else is Americans for Prosperity up to in the state of Mississippi?
Yeah, so, well, you know, we had an event recently with some of our coalition partners and state legislators. We appreciate all those who came by, and we brought in three experts on healthcare policy. One in particular, in fact, I think you're probably down in his neighborhood if you were near Northport, and down in Southwest Florida when you were away. But Dr. Lee Gross, he's a primary care physician, and he speaks all over the country and around free market healthcare solutions. And so, what we hope that we accomplished is we started real conversations around solutions to healthcare and what we call the personal option. And you can actually go, you could just go on Google AFP, the personal option. It'll take you to our website. But we can talk about some transformative type of policy that can actually, because there is no silver bullet, right? If there was a silver bullet on all of this, we didn't get there with one means of bad policy.
Yeah.
We're not going to get out of it with one means. But I do believe there's a lot of things. You know, there's the collaborative piece on nurse practitioners. We're looking at reducing or repealing a certificate of need laws around mental health facilities and substance abuse facilities. And there's a need here in Mississippi. I think you have, but just watch your evening news to kind of understand that need. So I think those are some cool things we're working on. And we're excited. We are going to be at the Egg Bowl this year. So we've got a couple of tents and we're going to be tabling up there. And, you know, we hope to see several people stop by. We're certainly put some invitations out that. But if you're going to be at the game, come by and talk to us. We'd love to share with you. Hopefully we'll have a couple of giveaways and a few things like that and make it a fun day. And we're looking into, I'm definitely going to be, because I've got some pretty awesome tickets to the Mississippi State Georgia game, and so but we might also be up there tailgating as well, and hopefully one of the things we can do is put out some information to people. We figure there'll be a large gathering of people, and if you'd like to find out more about who, not only who we are, but what can be, what's possible, right? What we can do here if we just take some bold steps to believe in it and make Mississippi better in a lot of areas.
Does AFP do anything on college campuses? Do you have a college
branch? I actually partnered with the Mississippi Center for Public Policy this past Saturday. I spoke to a group of college students, and I think a lot of people start with, oh, college students, right? They're all woke, they're all this, or whatever.
Young Americans for Liberty are on fire on the campuses. I love those guys.
We had most of the students were from Mississippi State or Ole Miss, some Mississippi College, and there were actually high school students there. And I have to say to you, my presentation was on liberty, defining it, why we need more of it in Mississippi. And I'm really proud of these young people who are most of them, a lot of them poli sci majors who really they are woke, but they're getting it. They're actually getting it and starting to think outside the box. These are future leaders, but you know what? They're also, if not already, they're future voters and citizens who can make a difference. And so one of the things I encourage them to do is to start engaging more. You know, there's a lot of young people in the state who just need a voice. And so we're looking forward. So this is one of the reasons we're going to be on some of the college campuses, but you will find us at Ole Miss and Mississippi State very regularly from here on out. We have a Nathan Moore, who's doing our grassroots engagement up there, is really building up community. And we plan to be a big part of Oxford and Starkville communities and in between and really trying to make a difference, not only with the students, but, it's interesting because one of the things that students face is a false narrative from their professors, and they were pretty vocal about what that can look like. And so it was really interesting to, it's not a new thing I haven't heard on college campuses, but we're definitely going to do some work here in Mississippi. We do it in other states. One thing that came up that they were very, very interested in was free speech.
Yeah.
And as we call it, free speech and peace. So it's the idea that you and I can sit down with civility and exchange ideas and talk through things and debate them. I think that's an awesome way for the legislator to approach it.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, I have run across, particularly doing this radio show, I've had a ton of, I call them kids, maybe that's disrespectful, 23, 25, 27-year-olds. So much sharper than I was when I was their age. I mean, they're really sharp people. Now, most of the ones that I've had have been kind of libertarian bent, but there's just like this stream of these really young adults. And I think there is this idea that everybody coming out of college is indoctrinated. No, there's some great kids there. And I think it's important to be there. I saw that when I was involved in the Ron Paul campaign in 2008. Man, he fired up college campuses across the country.
Absolutely.
They were really on fire for what he was talking about, which was peace. It was stuff that, I think a lot of college students are open to in the first place. So it is definitely a place to hit, because you're right. They're going to be our voters.
Well, I'm encouraged. Yeah. I actually am encouraged. Yeah. And we're looking forward to doing more events in those communities and others. We're looking at partnering here with some of the colleges here in the Jackson area. We've actually had some conversations, some kind of preliminary conversations with professors here. And I do believe that there's a lot of room to work. When I was back in Florida at Florida International University, we actually provided a college course.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could get some real credit. Right. You could apply for it, right? You could actually get some real credit and learn a little bit about we had it covered different things around the career perspective of it, but we actually just talk to people to get them to think outside the standard box that comes in most of those textbooks and to really think about policy differently. And so I'm looking forward to that. We're hoping to get someone to accept that. We've had a couple of conversations, but we'd love to be able to have those college credits on the campuses and let people not just come to some of our meetings and have some pizza. We'd really like for them to gain some knowledge and get credit for doing it.
Yeah, well, we need to quit yelling at these kids and start educating the kids.
Absolutely.
And talking to them.
And adults as well.
Yeah, you're right. All right, one more break. We'll be right back. Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down
on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. Final segment here with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. Starla, we only got a couple minutes left. I could probably do another hour with you today. I have so many questions. You've seen this kind of economic stuff around the country. Sure. You've got great experience in it, but we've talked some off air too. But in the couple minutes we've got left, what else has Americans Prosperity got going on? Make sure people know how they can reach out to you and get involved.
Sure. So obviously, Stone Clanton is our grassroots engagement director in sort of that central Mississippi piece. He's been working Meridian, Jackson, and probably going to be heading over to Vicksburg, Natchez area for a couple of attending some events and starting to build some communities there. Nathan Morris, again, serving the north half of the state. Right now, we're focusing on Oxford and Starkville areas. He's been moving over into DeSoto County and some small communities in between. So we do have a position open. I'm gonna go ahead and make a plug for that on the coast. So we're looking for somebody who would handle the coast, the Pine Belt, and Southwest Mississippi.
Yeah.
So if you're somebody out there who has an interest and thinks it's something like join our team, you can actually go to AmericansForProsperity.org and to our careers tab and apply online. But right now we're all kind of focused on next Tuesday.
It's getting to be time.
A lot of tired people across this country, but our teams have been out 6-7 days a week for some time now on the ground. And they're running a tremendous ground game.
Real quick, what's your thinking on next Tuesday? Red wave? Feels like it's coming.
Feels much better even than it did 2 or 3 weeks ago, which I felt pretty good about it. Look, there's a lot of people that are speculating the House is going to flip. I do believe that. I do believe that. And you know me, political parties mean nothing if you don't take the right votes. But I feel encouraged on the Senate side. So we'll see.
A 54-seat Republican majority. Some headline today.
Yeah, you're starting to see some of the pollsters and some of the prediction individuals out there coming in line with that.
Oh, predict it. If anybody would have taken the Republicans about 3 weeks ago, you would have made some good money if they won.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. I was kind of like, I should have placed my bets, right?
Right.
I'm feeling good about it because I think what I can say to you is, polls aside, when you've been at people's doors, as our teams have all across the country and in many states, I mean, I myself have been in 3 or 4 different states this year knocking doors. It's what people are telling you at the door.
Yeah.
And people are fed up
they
with inflation.
Mad.
Inflation, there's not a poll out there when you poll on policy or issues. Inflation's at the top of everything, and nothing else comes close. There's nothing even in double digits.
I'd say this is the worst political environment for anybody incumbent like a Biden right now of my lifetime. So the fact that there wasn't considered a red wave, I've just been shocked by. But anyway, we've only got about 10 seconds left. How can they find you online?
If you go to Facebook, you can go to Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook and AFP_MS on Twitter.
Great. Thanks, Starla. So everybody else, see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.